Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. I can't believe it's 1 week before Thanksgiving. It's just amazing how quickly this year has been flying by. But with the holiday approaching, there's lots of activities going on everywhere, in and around the city, and certainly here at the IE Green Homestead. We are gearing up for our 20th annual feeding of the homeless in Rufus King Park. And this is a huge event that IE Green has been participating in collaboration with the River Fund Food Pantry for 20 years now. And what started as a small group of people making some turkey, stuffing, mashed potatoes, and the works has turned into a huge event where I have people donating raw turkeys and cooked turkeys. I'm sorry, all my vegetarians out there, I know it's really not a great thing, but once a year I actually put some of my own personal beliefs aside to bring a meal to people that otherwise wouldn't have one. And this year I think there's over 80 people that have signed up on to participate in the cooking event that takes place all weekend long. We serve the folks at Rufus King Park on Tuesday. And typically, there's over 600 people that are waiting online for hours in the park to get this meal. And I have to say, the meal that they are receiving is created by people who are really putting their hearts into it, and you can taste the feeling of love in this food. It's very different than a traditional soup kitchen where people are just being, tossed out some food. This is food that really so many hands have touched and have touched with real care. I have families show up with their kids who really honor this time and are so thankful to have an opportunity to demonstrate for their children ways of giving back to the community. And so as we gear up, I wanted to make sure that I wished everybody out there listening a really wonderful Thanksgiving next year. And if you are interested in participating or donating any funds to the River Fund New York, which does this amazing work year-round, please look them up. It's called the River Fund New York, or you can send checks to IE Green to participate. You can also sign up if you are interested in volunteering. Let me go over some of the wonderful things going on in the city, and then I have a wonderful show planned for you today. My guest is going to be Joanna Macy, who is a food activist just an activist for decades now, and she has been, she's also an author. She just rewrote her book, Coming Back to Life, and I'm going to have her on in a little bit, and we're going to be talking about her new book. I also, of course, have my favorite Thanksgiving recipe to share with all of you, a stuffed heirloom pumpkin, which I will be sharing with you. But first, let's just talk about some of the wonderful things going on in the city, if you live in this area. There is a fundraiser tonight for Grassroots Environmental Education Center, and that's at the Wainwright House in Rye, New York. Thanksgiving Feast for the Homeless, as I just told you, will be cooking up all weekend long and serving on Tuesday. Also this weekend, November 22nd, Healthy Planet is celebrating their 21st annual Healthy, Green, and Turkey-Free Thanksgiving Dinner. That's going to be at Molloy College's Sustainability Institute at their Suffolk Center. But you can go onto Healthy Planet's website to find out more information, or onto my website. All of these things are listed on my website. Slow Food New York City is having a monthly happy hour on November 24th at Alice's Arbor in Brooklyn. And Slow Food East End is having a screening of Fed Up, which is the wonderful movie that was made with Katie Couric about sugar in our foods and how they hide the sugar in our foods and how everyone is addicted. So that's something, a really great movie. A couple other movies that are coming out tomorrow, Food Chains is coming out nationwide, and that's an incredible documentary about farm workers and how our food gets to us. And it's just amazing that workers can be treated the way that some of these farm workers are treated in this country. So if you get a chance to see Food Chains, that's a great one to see. Also, another movie, Cowspiracy, has been screening across the nation, and we will be showing it at our local Slow Food chapter on December 17th at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. But before that, on December 9th, Slow Food North Shore is also going to be celebrating Terra Madre Day, which actually is really being celebrated nationwide on December 10th. But Terra Madre is Mother Earth, and we will be celebrating the Terra Madre event that takes place in Torino, Italy, where myself and another member of our chapter went last month. And we have slides that we're going to be showing and a short video talking about the Arc of Taste, which is an incredible program that Slow Food has launched, which is protecting different varieties and heirloom varieties of vegetables around our country that are in threat of becoming extinct. I know we hear about animals becoming extinct. Well, also we have crops that were traditional in this country that no longer are being grown, and we're trying to catalog those products, identify them, and preserve them. And so people are saving those seeds and growing these products. And one that I really got to taste when I was at Terra Madre was a watermelon, a special variety of watermelon that's grown down in North Carolina. And it's the watermelon that they make pickled watermelon rind with. And it was delicious. And I've heard about pickled watermelon rind, never had it before, and this is one particular type of watermelon that you need to use to make that. So it's exciting, this Arc of Taste program. And so we'll be talking about that. On December 11th, I am doing a cooking demo, which is free at the Cold Spring Harbor Library. You do need to register. But that is going to be a wonderful demonstration. And on December 12th, the United Action organization is going to be, United for Action is going to be screening a documentary called Above All Else at the Rutgers Presbyterian Church in the city. It's free, but there is a suggested donation of $10. And again, you can find out more on my website. Save the date for the NOFA New York annual winter conference. That's January 23rd. Through the 25th, and you can also go to the NOFA Massachusetts Winter Conference on January 10th. So lots of great things going on. I do want to share that recipe with you, but I also want to just talk about a couple things on my newsletter this week. I had an opportunity for Take Action. One was yesterday was a big call-in day to call Governor Cuomo's office to ban fracking, and if you're in the Long Island region, to also ban the liquefied natural gas plant that they're trying to build off the coast of Long Island called the Fort Ambrose Project. We need phone calls to continue to Governor Cuomo's office. It's really important. When my guest comes on, we'll be talking about how everything is connected, the interconnectedness of everything, and we need to really make more and more people aware of that. This interconnectedness is so important. And so when we talk about fracking and how that destroys our land and our water, that affects our food. It's all connected. The other thing that I wanted to make sure everyone was aware of is that we just, by the skin of our teeth, managed to defeat the Keystone Pipeline again this week. But that was only by one vote, and the Keystone Pipeline is the pipeline that is going to be coming down from Alberta, Canada, all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico to bring the really horrible crude oil from Alberta, Canada, down to refineries, down into the Gulf of Mexico, and then to be exported out to China. You know, people say it's going to create jobs, but it's going to be covering and going across some of the most pristine land in our country that provides water to many other parts of the country. Again, everything is connected. And this Keystone Pipeline is a disaster. We've had hundreds and hundreds of pipeline accidents. We have hundreds of pipeline accidents a year. And so we just can't afford to have this huge pipeline going across our country like that. So we need everyone to let their senators and congressmen know that you do not want this Keystone to be approved, because as soon as the Republican Senate comes into play, this margin that we won by, which is only one vote, is really going to go out the window. So we'll be talking more about that, I'm sure, in the, later on in the show. So I want to share a recipe with you that I make every year for Thanksgiving. You know, every year when people bring out turkey, you know, that's like the centerpiece for so many people's table. But if you don't eat turkey and you want to have a beautiful centerpiece, what is really seasonal right now that could take that place? And for me, it's a stuffed pumpkin. And I buy an organic pumpkin or an heirloom pumpkin. I actually grow pumpkins on my property, so I, you know, pick the biggest one, and I roast that in the oven and then make a mixture, stir fry, that I then stuff the pumpkin with. So this is the recipe that I want to share with you. I also have a little video of it on YouTube. If you just Google stuffed pumpkin with I.E. Green, you'll be able to see that video. Okay, so a stuffed heirloom pumpkin. You're going to start with one large, round, organic pumpkin. Now, I use seitan in this recipe. If you have a gluten allergy, you can certainly use tofu or tempeh. Any type of protein for a vegetarian you can put into this. And if you'd like, you can also just use like canned chickpeas or some sort of bean in here to take that place. So I use a pound and a half of seitan. I usually make my own, and but you can buy some really good brands out there. So White Wave makes one, Raise makes one, so check out the different types that your local health food store sells. You need one onion that you're going to chop, 4 carrots cut into wedges, 1 pound of mushrooms sliced, and you can use a mixture, shiitakes, portobellos, baby bellas, whatever you'd like, 2 yellow squash, 1 butternut squash, 1 sweet potato cut into chunks, 2 red or yellow peppers, 1 head of broccoli cut up into flowerettes, 4 parsnips, 1/2 small napa cabbage, 2 small baby bok choys, 1/4 cup of tamari, which is a wheat-free soy sauce. I, of course, buy it organic. Anytime you're buying anything with soy, corn, beets, you want to make sure it's organic because it's all GMO'd otherwise. 4 cloves of garlic, 2-inch piece of ginger that I grate up in a little mini chopper, 2 tablespoons of aji marin, which is a sweet rice wine, 2 tablespoons of tahini mixed with 1 cup of water, and that's just going to be some of the sauce that's going to be in the dish, 1 package of frozen peas, 1 pound of potatoes cut into chunks, 2 sprigs of rosemary, and 2 sprigs of thyme, and of course salt and pepper to taste. So you're going to start by cutting a circle on the top of the pumpkin. Scrape out all the seeds and replace the top of the pumpkin. And place the pumpkin in a shallow baking pan with a little water on the bottom. Make a tent of aluminum foil over the pumpkin to prevent it from burning, and then bake the pumpkin in a 300-degree oven until it's soft. And that takes about 1.5 to 2 hours, depending on the size of the pumpkin. And just be careful. You might have to turn it around. Sometimes the back of the pumpkin close to the wall of the back oven can start to burn. So you just want to watch for that and make sure that it's tented with the aluminum foil. Meanwhile, you're going to saute the onions, the carrots, the butternut squash, the parsnips, the potatoes, and the sweet potato in a stock pot with a little bit of olive oil. Add the garlic and the ginger and cook for about 10 minutes on low, just allowing some of those vegetables to steam and cook down a little bit. Then you're going to add the broccoli, the mushrooms, the peppers, the yellow squash, the bok choy, cabbage, and the herbs, and any other veggies you want. And, of course, you can, the vegetables, you know, it's not a set rule. You can really substitute vegetables. Sometimes I put green beans in instead of the squash, and, you know, you switch it around if you'd like. You're going to add the tahini and water mixture, the mirin, the tamari, and also some frozen peas. And mix that around. Then you can add the seitan and let that cook for 20 more minutes. If you are going to be using tempeh or tofu, that needs to be cooked separately first before adding it into the stock pot, where seitan is already cooked when you buy it and does not need to be cooked anymore. It can just cook in the stew. When the pumpkin's soft, you're going to fill the pumpkin with the already hot vegetables and return it to the oven for about 30 minutes, allowing the flavors to meld and to really steam up. And then you serve it right out of the pumpkin on the dining room table, and it's really a beautiful presentation. Put it out on a platter, decorate it, and have fun. And that is my recipe. And now it's my pleasure to introduce my guest, Joanna Macy. Joanna is an eco-philosopher, a scholar of Buddhism, and she has come up with a wonderful methodology to help people deal with the social changes and the the ways of getting involved in our world. And she calls this the work that reconnects. And I'm going to let her tell us more about that. Joanna, are you on?
Hi there.
Hi, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, Bhavani. What a pleasure to hear your recipe. I've never done that before.
Oh, it is so much fun.
I look it up on YouTube.
It is. There's a video on YouTube that you can watch.
Oh, good.
Okay, it's really, it's very easy to do, and it's just really a great centerpiece, so I recommend it.
I'll do it with thoughts of you.
Thank you. Well, I received your book, and it's beautiful.
I'm so relieved.
Yes, I received the book. The opening words by the Dalai Lama is really beautiful. That was really nice to read. And I want to just give you a chance to tell us about the book and why were you inspired to rewrite the book? I know the original came out in 1998.
Well, you know, Bhavani, so much has happened since 1998, the last 16 years. And first of all, the work itself had grown because this is a way that people can measure up to and open their eyes and their hearts to the huge changes that are happening. You were talking about fracking on the phone, just on the radio, just a bit ago, and the liquefied natural gas and the Keystone Pipeline coming down from the tar sand.
Right.
These are developments in our world that are very hard to take, and a lot of people just want to shut down and pull the covers up over their head. But we need to find a way to find the power and energy of our interconnectedness with each other and with the living Earth in order to act for the sake of life on Earth. So this work has been developing over the last 30 years, going strong, but it's open source, so a lot of people contribute, and it's very invigorating. But the changes that have happened to our culture since the last edition of the book in 1998 are huge, and it's becoming harder for people to imagine being able to make a difference. So among them has been the events of 9/11 in 2001, and those are just huge. They have turned the world into a battlefield. They have made us afraid. The government itself has grown strong in militarization of the police, surveillance, and trying to persuade us that we are in terrible danger from terrorists who are lurking around every corner and becoming even afraid of ourselves, afraid of speaking out. So we look at both the changed context of our world so that we can not be feeling intimidated or isolated. You know, when people feel isolated, they get obedient to voices that would control them and say, just trust us, our leaders. You know, don't worry about climate change or don't worry about the Keystone Pipeline. We'll take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not democracy. Democracy has suffered greatly since 9/11. And in case you haven't noticed.
Mm-hmm.
So this book, I'm feeling so good about it, Bhavani. It's pretty. It's beautiful, isn't it?
It is beautiful, really beautiful.
And it's got opening chapters on worldview, what's happening to us, sort of the theoretical part, and then the chapters and chapters of practices that you can do with other people or with yourself, with your mind and with your heart, that help you speak the truth and find the dignity and power that are there for you in acting on behalf of Earth and on behalf of all beings.
So can you explain to all of my listeners what the work is of the work that reconnects? I mean, you know, what
makes... Well, the work is to help us speak the truth to ourselves and to each other about what we feel and see and know is happening to our world so that we can find our own authority. And you can do this by yourself, but it's really grew out of working interactively. And so most of the processes in the book are done with others, and sometimes just two or three others in your living room or in workshops, and people have made sort of a study group, so you can take a book group and do some of these practices together.
Mm-hmm.
And
now do you also have actual workshops that you offer?
Yeah,
right?
And we have
trainings.
That's right, we have a website, workthatreconnects.org, where people can find others who are doing the work already or facilitators or others. But there are also just countless book groups that spring up. So if you can't find something near you, you can join in with teleseminars and webinars that are happening, or just pick up the book, and you can also find it online. So I told you, it's workthatreconnects.org, also Active Hope. Info@ActiveHope, and so that there can do it with yourself and with others, so that you can counteract the fear and counteract the shutting down that is characterizing so much of our culture today. There are things that are happening that we tolerate that we wouldn't have tolerated before.
Right.
You know,
so
like
right.
Torture, for example. There's so much that we sort of tune out, and that's a kind of creeping death to the spirit and to our chances for the future.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that I love is that this work does bring people together, because I think in our society, too often people are working alone and are in their little bubbles, and
exactly.
And that's why you feel so small and like, you know, these problems are so big. How can you possibly make a difference? And you feel helpless before you even start, so you don't even know why you should bother starting.
That's right,
you know,
and that just makes you feel more powerless and more isolated.
Mm-hmm.
So this all things are connected has to do with us. We're connected, and to rediscover that, actually, it does more for your love for life than any kind of pill or medicine, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not only connected to each other, we're connected to the ancestors and the future generations. We're connected to all species. We can speak on their behalf and act on their behalf, and that's one of the things that we do in this process, is that we start talking to ourselves and each other on behalf of plant and animal species, to get realize that we're just one thread in the web of life, one species, and we don't need to cut ourselves off. at
right.
the roots from the vast web of life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know a lot of your philosophy comes from your spiritual work with Buddhism. Can you share with us how Buddhism has grounded your work and how those teachings guide
And also
you?
From my roots tradition, which is in the Christianity and in the Old Testament as well. So, you know, so there's Buddhism stands out in its, for me, in my experience, in its recognition of our mutual belonging to each other. That was the central teaching of the Buddha. But it's, and it's also present in every spiritual path and every religious tradition, is the understanding that all life is interwoven, a tapestry of many beings, and the sacredness of all that is. The Buddhism has practices, though, that put that, make that so, that interconnectedness almost like something you can taste or feel with the palms of your hands. It's just
right.
the practices for experiencing our love for each other and for life, practices for experiencing the power of our intention, acting for good, practices for feeling how experiencing our the immensity of the life within us. So, like that, sort of like there's a phrase in Buddhism that we use because there isn't one. Though, actually, I have to tell you that doing the work, it's not just for Buddhists. I work with churches, with synagogues, with activists, with protesters on the street, with people in all walks of life. And so but Buddhism offers practices that are far useful for anybody, regardless of what their belief system is. I don't need, if you follow me.
Of course I do. And in your work, you talk about the spiral. What is the spiral?
Oh, well, this is a kind of, the spiral is a sequencing, a little path you walk when you're doing the work. And you can do it by yourself or with a group or in a meeting or in a workshop. But you start, so you're confronted with something, and you start with, you were just for, with gratitude. So that's the spiral. It starts with gratitude that grounds you and makes you feel, oh, I have a right to be here without fear. And then, because it's hard to feel really grateful for life and afraid at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So gratitude grounds you. Then the next step in the station in the spiral, which has four stations, the second one is noticing the distress, the anguish that comes up for you when you hear about what's happening to the world. And it's a distress of feeling grief. There's so much grief in all of us for the losses of this time. You were just talking about the watermelon. There's so much that's winking out of from the web of life. And so the outrage that we feel and the overwhelm that we feel. So our mainstream culture tells us that comes out of our personal craziness or some private neurosis, and we pave it over, we repress it. In the work that reconnects, we look at that pain and we see this is normal, it is healthy, it's not neurotic, it is our groundedness in life itself that is speaking. So we're no longer putting any energy into trying to repress our despair or grief or anger over what's happening, but say, oh, this is evidence of my deep caring and belonging. And so in being able to speak that or befriend that pain for the world, it gets released and turns into a stronger than ever realization of our interconnectedness. And so the third station is really seeing with new eyes, seeing the world as our larger body, seeing each other as our brothers and sisters, seeing the future ones and the ancestors as at our side in protecting life. And the fourth station of the spiral is then taking this and deciding, what am I going forth to action? What can I do? What do I want to do? What do I ache to do for the sake of life on Earth, given who I am and where I am and the people I see and the community I'm in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so it's a path that you do with the group, the book is set up that way, and it's something even when you are looking at the paper or the TV or the news of the day, and there's plenty dealing with that, and you just go through that in your head to help you not feel isolated and crazy, but ready to act.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's so important, because I know from just the people that I know and love in my circles that, and with my children, that it's very easy to be overwhelmed and to have that feeling of despair, and they don't really know how to turn it into action.
That's right. It just shuts us down. So
mm-hmm.
It's one of the, it's very bracing. It's very invigorating to do this work and find the strength and courage that was already there in you. It's right there because you are alive, and the power, all your ancestors that brought you forward, they're gifts for this time of the great turning. We see this time as one of a chance to participate with each other in building a life-sustaining culture, a life-sustaining society, in
mm-hmm.
spite of all that's happening. And so the ancestors want that. The future beings need that. And there's so many invisible help there for us, just coming through with the air we breathe and with the beauty that we can see in the skies and the trees and the world around us still.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The work is so enormous, and there's so much to be done that the part, really trying to give people the tools to make that change is so important.
Yes, and it can't be done just out of feelings of dread and guilt. It can only come out of feelings of love so intense that it's like you want to celebrate life, so that this is, we don't need to close down. We can open up to all the love we've ever felt.
Right, but it's so hard for these young people to find strength in that uncertainty.
Yes. Oh, and that is what I just did the most amazing weekend with a group of young people. They're almost all in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And they're activists that are exhilarated by the challenges, and that they can see, and we look together how actually we can't know if we're going to make it. We cannot know if the great turning to a life-sustaining society is going to happen before everything unravels and life winks out. But that not knowing is actually characteristic of life itself. There are never any guarantees. There are never any guarantees when you plant a seed you'll have a bumper crop, or you go into labor you're going to have a healthy delivery, or you fall in love that you're going to have an enduring, healthy relationship. You never
mm-hmm.
know. And it's that not knowing that can, that knife edge of uncertainty that can bring forth our greatest courage and creativity and solidarity with each other.
I think in our society today, people are so used to trying to know everything. You know, with babies, we used to not know if we were having a boy or a girl, and now people want to know. And you
That's
say, you
right.
know, if it's going to be healthy or not. Well, now there's all these tests to find out. You know, there's very little in life that is really...
Yeah, and does that need this controlling things and finding out things? Well, of course, you can't control, but we try to control.
Right.
And if you know everything ahead of time, does that make you feel more exhilarated? Does that bring more life and excitement into you?
I would tend to think not.
No, yeah.
Right. Anyway, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, we're going to talk some more about some of the three stories of our time that you talk about. So
okay.
Everyone, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Joanna Macy, author of Coming Back to Life and an activist that has so much wisdom to share with all of us. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani and the Progressive Radio Network at IE Green. And my guest today is Joanna Macy. She's an eco-philosopher and scholar of Buddhism, and her new book, or revised book, Coming Back to Life, is what we are talking about today. Joanna, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Great. So in the book, you talk about... three stories of our time. What are those three stories?
There are three ways of looking at what's happening to our world, in our world, like three lenses that you see through, a version of reality. And we can still choose how we see our world. So these three stories or lenses or stories we tell ourselves are... A business as usual, the great unraveling, and the great turning. Business as usual means all we need to do is keep on growing our economy through the industrial growth society, or you could say late stage capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And this means that everything's going to be okay as long as we just get back to taking care of number one, seeing that we're still control the world as the American Empire and so forth. And that is the story we hear from the leaders of our government. Certainly, these are... from our corporate heads, CEOs of the publicly traded corporations that have to keep growing, what we hear from the military, and what we hear from the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, we begin to think that this is almost normal. And what the big brother or big daddy will take care of us if we just believe that. But the second story is what we hear from the scientists who haven't been bought, from the independent journalists, from activists who are working together to see that their life can go on this planet. And that's the story we call the Great Unraveling. It looks at the costs of the business as usual, what it is doing to living beings in the fabric of life on this fragile and beautiful planet. What's happening to the weather? What's happening to the species? What's happening to the oceans and the rivers? What's happening to the forests? What's happening to our air? And so that story is pretty grim.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a lot of evidence to support it, of course. And then the third story is what we call the Great Turning. It's the transition that is happening from the industrial growth society to a life-sustaining society. And this great turning is happening at a great rate of speed. Social thinkers see it as the third revolution of our human journey, as momentous as the agricultural revolution 10,000 years ago, and as the industrial revolution that started in England just less than three centuries ago. And this one is springing up, but it's not in the mainstream news, but it consists of all the people who are out there slowing down the great unraveling, the destruction being wrought by our capitalist or industrial growth way of life. And it consists of new ways of doing things that are often old ways of doing things, of new ways that are springing up, of holding the land, of growing our food, of feeding ourselves. This program of yours, Bhavani, is part of the Great Turning. Mm-hmm. And that dimension of it, of bringing forth new ways of seeing and living that are in harmony with life itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the and it includes ways of seeing the sacredness of life, that this, our earth, is not just a supply house and a sewer for our wastes, contaminating everything. It doesn't depend on, it's not just a backdrop to our battles around the world to secure our resources and sell our goods. It's a living system. So
right.
This is the Great Turning. It is fed by revolutions in science and in spirituality, returning to a sense that most humanity had, that life is sacred, this earth is sacred, and it brings us together.
Mm-hmm.
So when you dare to, when you, particularly with each other, look at the Great Turning, you can feel so glad to be alive now. It's no longer some tragedy that you're born now. It's a great privilege to be
right.
able to be alive and take part in this revolution.
And it is. It's a social movement. And, you know, I get excited about it, you know, and I want to bring everybody else on board, because we need the numbers. When you talk about the first part of your story, the business as usual, that business has lots of money around them, which gives them such
yeah.
power. And we don't have that kind of money as
but we have
people, but we have the numbers of people. And
yeah.
we need to make it into a revolution in order for our politicians to hear us. You know, and one thing I guess I've realized as I've gotten older is, as much as I might not like politics, that's where the policies are made. And they're only going to listen to us if we're loud enough and large enough that they have no choice.
That's right. Yeah.
I remember when Obama said, you know, like, make me do it. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I want to do it, but I'm up against, you know, Congress or whatever. Make me do it. You know, we have to get so loud, and I don't think we've been loud enough.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we realize and we become loud enough when we link arms and we just peel ourselves away from being glued alone to our laptop screen or our television, and find ways both at work and with our families and everything we do to join with others and get to know the people in our towns, in our neighborhoods. They are wonderful. You know, this is what is called blessed unrest. Paul Hawken, in his wonderful book, he characterizes the Great Turning as a largest social movement in history, and compares it to our immune system. And he says there are millions of people around the world, millions of grassroots startup, you know, efforts and organizations that are acting as on behalf of Earth. They're people who are giving their lives and time and efforts on behalf of something, their larger body, the earth itself, not just for number one. And when you act for the earth, for the future ones, for the beauty and ongoingness of life, your whole life like lights up.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about that as well in your book. You talk about the meaningful partnerships that we need to create. And, you know, when you look at society, I know at one point you talked about, you know, there's not just a pill you can take, you know, when we're all depressed about this. I mean, even though people would like us to believe we can just take Prozac and everything will be better.
Yeah, right.
We know that that's not true. And yet if you look at societies, the people that are happiest, and as much as I hate all these extreme extremists, you know, the jihads and whatever, I mean, people are doing it because of the camaraderie you get with tight relationships. And I think,
yeah,
you know,
that's right. People are willing to go to any lengths as long as they can feel part of something bigger than themselves.
Right, right. And you know, you look at the societies, like whether it's the Amish or different spiritual groups, I mean, there is, you know, a sense of belonging, like you're saying.
Okay.
And, you know, and we are more isolated with these computers and laptops. I mean, people don't even talk on the phone practically. And, you know, people,
yeah,
you know, I hear
I'm
my
so
kids,
glad
you know,
you're emphasizing that, because only when that's what we most yearn for. We really want that more than we want a new car, or more than we want assurance, that comfort even. We'd rather, we want that sense of deep belonging and of an adventure together, because this is the great adventure of our time, is linking arms and visioning a future that works and acting for it together. It's so beautiful right near in this dismal election we had. Right next door here to where I live in the San Francisco Bay is the town of Richmond, and it's the place for the main one of the main refineries for Chevron oil. And in order to control the town, Chevron poured millions. It's a very marginal economic society. They're sick from the emissions from the refinery, but Chevron poured money in, and in spite of that, the candidates for the people's control won. Same thing where I live. The sugar drink industries, we call Big Soda,
mm-hmm.
poured millions in here to stop us from taxing sugar drinks, and which are so, you know, causing illness, diabetes, and obesity in our kids and
mm-hmm.
our families.
Mm-hmm.
And despite that, we were going door to door together and with our families, and we're the only community in the country so far, just the first, they'll follow,
mm-hmm.
who have managed to succeed in taxing a Big Soda.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
which
this
is great. I wish they also taxed diet soda, because the last thing you want to do is encourage people to not drink sugar soda and start drinking diet soda.
Yes.
The tax should apply to all soda. That's my only gripe with the tax. You know?
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it taxes just the sugar soda, and so it encourages everybody to buy diet soda, which is, you know, studies have been coming out that doesn't really help with obesity or anything anyway, because your brain doesn't fall for it. And so you don't lose
weight
by drinking.
All right, listen up, everybody.
Yeah, it's really
listen
true.
To Bonnie.
So just drink water, filtered water. Oh, I know, what a world we live in. But, you know, the work you're doing is just great. It's so wise, and it makes so much sense, and it's so needed. And, you know, I love the work that you're doing. So thank you so much for doing what you do.
Well, I thank you, Bhavani, and I'm going to think of you as I find my stuffed heirloom pumpkin.
Good. Please make that. But before we go, can you share with us what is your favorite chapter in your revised version of coming back to life?
Well, I think that maybe the one I'd want people to is the work we call Deep Time, and it's the chapter about reconnecting with the ancestors and the future generations. When we do those processes and do those thought experiments with ourselves, our friends, our workshops, it gives people such a an injection of energy and hope, because then you feel that you're part of a great long stream. You're not just living isolated in the present fleeting moment, but that you are you're very old. The life in you goes back to the first splitting and spinning of the stars all through the first cell in the primordial seas. Every adventure since then of life is what is you see in your body. You are as old as the living atoms in the cells and the molecules of your body. And so you have an authority there of this great story, this new cosmology, this great story of life on Earth. And similarly, all the beings that will ever live are here now, and they're here in our gonads and ovaries, and they're in our DNA and in the decisions we make. We've got to remember that, because we are doing, with our fracking, we are injecting chemicals into the groundwater, and we have a limited, we'll never have more fresh water on the planet than we do now, and we never can take out the toxic chemicals we're pumping into it.
I know.
So if we can wake up.
What? You know, the ancient Indians used to say, you know, what every decision you make today has to be good 7 generations out. You need to look that far out to do this and make your decision today.
And we can, look 4 million years, 1 billion years out, because that's the half-life of the depleted uranium we're strewing around in all our war making. In fact, on our own troops as well as on enemy, so-called enemy populations. Mm-hmm. So we're doing things that are contaminating and crippling to life from here on out. So a big picture of time is really helps us, and it gives us a kind of lift to the soul when we see ourselves on a much bigger stage of history and feel that the future ones are working through us at our side in our moral imagination.
Well, that's a beautiful way to end. Thank you. Just quickly, everybody, I want you to be able to go to Joanna Macy's website. So, Joanna, you want to just share that with everybody?
Yeah. So, folks, look up joannamacy.net. And also know about workthatreconnects.org.
Great. And on that website, you can find out where a workshop near you might be taking place, or you can, as Joanna
said, you can order
the book. Participate in webinars. Get the book. It's a great book. And, you know, join the movement. We need everybody. We need everybody out there to join this movement to work towards a better future for our planet and for all the beings on Earth. Thank you, Joanna, for joining us. Everybody out there,
I give
you
thanks
all have
for you and your work. Blessed Thanksgiving for you, Bhavani.
Thank you. And everybody out there, have a wonderful, blessed Thanksgiving. We will not have a show next week while we all enjoy Thanksgiving. And I will be with all of you the following Thursday. Bye for now, and have a great holiday, everyone.